You're listening to the Table of Malcontents, where Aaron Armstrong, Dave Schrader, and Barnabas Piper talk about the books they love and a few they really don't to help you be a better reader. Hey guys, welcome to today's episode of, what's our podcast called again?
Table of Malcontents.
That's right.
Malcontents.
That's right.
Malcontents.
Malcontents.
I think I got that right. Malcontents.
Malcontents.
There you go.
That's right. Mm. So
it's like a play on the word, the phrase table of contents. Aaron.
It may in fact be a play on.
Good. I can't wait for someone to be like, I don't get it.
I know. Don't worry. Today,
that's all it's going to say in face.
Today, someone is going to get that. And,
too long, didn't read.
That's true. That's true. Sorry. It's going to happen. It's okay. But, you know, this is a great way for us to start a podcast because why not? So, but we are talking about sports books today.
Are you talking about sports books, Aaron, or are you just sitting this one out?
You know,
because listeners will know that this is not your typical cup of tea.
That's true. But, you know, I have I did something special this week.
Special.
Special.
What did you do?
Well, I started listening to a sports book.
Aw, you'll always remember your first.
Yeah.
Was this the history of curling?
No. No? No, but close.
Nothing? No?
But close. It's,
was it about the Iditarod?
Isn't that ours? That's ours.
It doesn't go through the Yukon Territory? Is it only in Alaska?
No, no, it's only in Alaska.
Sorry, Canadians.
Listen, it's called 99 Stories of the Game by Wayne Gretzky.
Is it 99 stories or 99 is the title and then the subtitle?
99. Colon stories of the game.
So 99 being Gretzky's number for you listeners. So it's about
not that
99.
He has colon issues.
Yeah, I mean he's of the age.
I mean he's 57. So
he's only 57.
That's true. Yes, he's 57. Well, I mean keep in mind that you know from what I understand
he broke into the league at like 18. So
that's true. That's true. And he was playing. He was playing the hockey. You know, from the time he was 5.
Aaron, for the sake of listeners and for your cool factor.
I don't have a cool factor.
For the sake of generating the occasional cool factor for you.
Thank you.
And I realize this is also just an added effect that you do. Putting the in front of sports is generally unnecessary. It's kind of like, I realize you know this, but it's kind of like your parents talking about the Google. You know, that's you in sports. But just going to put that out there. As a man of words and letters, I think you might care about these things.
You know, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. You're helping me be a better person.
That's right. So what is your overall opinion at the current stage of this singular sporting experience you're having?
Well, I am about halfway through the book so far. Uh-huh. And what I would say is that it is interesting, but I'm kind of lost because I don't really understand
hockey.
I don't, but I don't, but I mean, so here's the thing. Yeah, I know. I'm the worst Canadian. I'm what's wrong with Canada, guys, because I don't
care.
Not
anymore because you're not there.
That's true. But I don't care about hockey.
You've just imported what's wrong with Canada to us.
That's true. So now I'm what's wrong with America.
Well, there's plenty more. We had plenty wrong before you got here.
Yeah, that's true.
But you didn't grow up in a family where like sports was like...
No.
Which is fair.
No, it wasn't really a thing.
Barnabas didn't have a television, so it's okay. You know,
that's true. Like we didn't watch.
We all have our character flaws.
we didn't gather around the TV on Saturday night nights to watch Hockey Night in Canada.
I love that there is a Hockey Night in Canada.
Legit. There's a theme song.
That's so special.
That's Monday Night Football, essentially.
It is.
And it was the same era, because like the Howard Cosell Monday Night Football year in the States was Saturday Night Hockey?
Yeah.
In Canada?
Yeah. In Canada, eh?
In Canada.
Canada.
But it was, I mean, for cultural reasons. That's why. It's all about, it's kind of like why people get together in the Super Bowl. It's not about football for the majority.
Well, no.
It actually is about hockey.
No, they watch it and they get rip-roaring drunk.
Canadian hockey is a lot like, Champions League?
EPL, or any of that.
Like
they go crazy.
European soccer fans and their loyalties, Mm-hmm. A lot of that in Canada, except that there's a smaller number, and there's a touch more crazy because they all live north of the Arctic Circle. So
they all
slightly
live
south
north
of the slightly Circle. South of the Arctic
the
Circle.
The Arctic Circle is the Canadian border, listeners. Lesson in geography. If you didn't know that, now you do.
And now that Barnabas is proving what's wrong with the public education system in America,
I was publicly educated for only a few years. So maybe they corrupted me entirely, but
probably
a fair amount of homeschool and Christian school thrown in because none of them worked apparently.
That's
but
true.
So
that's
you're true. Enjoying so, it's interesting, but so the, it, but the hockey part of this book about hockey is a little puzzling to you.
Well, it's so I can follow it, and I'm getting the sense of like, okay, so there have been some big movements and eras in the sport itself, uh-huh. And that is an appropriate place to use the in the before
the sport. Yeah, yeah.
In the sport.
Yeah, but if you said the sports, that would be incorrect.
Correct. That's right. So,
clarifying for your sake.
Yeah, I understand.
No,
that.
You
Thank
sound
you.
Yes, you sounded yeah, yeah. like you know what you were speaking about
yeah,
when
yeah,
you
yeah.
said
Thank
that
you.
sentence.
Thank
That's
you.
Good.
So, I'm just proving to you that I'm listening.
Good.
I'm
hearing when you're learning feedback. Something from this book too, because you know? Yeah, you're picking up
Absolutely.
On these things.
So it's interesting. It's interesting from the perspective of getting a broader sense of really the history of professional hockey in general, and you know certainly hearing through a narrator who can't pronounce words properly that are Canadianisms like toque and fullscap.
Do you know what that means?
I don't, but yeah. I will commiserate that when an audiobook narrator gets a word wrong, it almost makes me just turn it off.
Oh,
like,
yes.
They get one chance.
Yeah.
And then like if they get a name wrong or a city name wrong or something, it's just I can't hack it. I'm like, what are you like? You're paid to do this.
Yeah. You
do
also have
homework.
A computer in front of you. You can
there was a side note. There was a book that I don't remember which book it was. But it was a Hannah Anderson book from Moody that I listened to, and it was good. But the narrator just said this one word wrong, and just kept Terrible. Doing it. And I was like, I just want to run my car off the road.
That word
made me so angry.
Yeah. That's a sidebar.
So, by the way, if you see the word, this is a teachable moment for everybody, okay. For you guys and for all two people who are still listening to this. If you see a word that is spelled T-O-C-Q-U, let me just double check it. Let me make sure I spell
that
it right.
That just sounds like a string of letters.
So is that French and Indian? What is that? I guess I don't know.
Nothing on audio medium so, like somebody Googling stuff.
T-O-Q-U-E.
T-O-Q-U-E.
Toke?
Toque.
Toque.
Toque?
Toque. Toque.
So you couldn't have bothered to throw another O in there or something?
Yeah. It's toque. A hat.
Oh, that's like a beanie.
It's
right?
It's a toque.
Yeah, but it's a beanie, right?
It's your snow hat, yes.
Snow hat. Okay.
But it's the kind with the little knobbly
ball. Some
of
them have that. Some do, but some don't. But typically it does have the ball.
You ball kind of guy? No. No, not a ball
but,
kind of guy.
Not a ball.
No. do with that what you will.
Yes. So I'm correcting myself because I didn't want to spell the word incorrectly, and I threw a C in there.
How
so.
Did the narrator pronounce it?
Toque. Which, phonetically.
How about that?
Yeah.
I know.
But immediately I thought of kids that I went to high school with and what they did at lunchtime. So
Fair enough.
Which most Canadians are also legally permitted to do now because it's past
October
17th.
See, that's not what's wrong with Canada. Look at that.
We're about there.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Side note, our all of our boss has been asking me frequently, are you sad you're not in Canada? I'm like, no, because I don't really care about that kind of stuff. And he's like, fair.
That's the right answer.
Yeah.
So may I recommend a sports book to you for your next round?
Yes, you may.
So in light of your lack of, like, you just don't follow sports, like the games themselves are not really your thing. You need something that is conceptually more interesting that involves sports and will do a good job of explaining what is it about the sports that matter.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. That's...
So I have two suggestions.
Okay,
both of them involve baseball.
Okay.
One of them is a book called Wait Till Next Year by Doris Kearns Goodwin, who is better known as a historian and is brilliant, both as a writer, storyteller, and as a historian. But Wait Till Next Year is her memoir of growing up in the 40s and 50s, starting in Brooklyn and then Long Island, New York. So it's more kind of Americana memoir, but the love of the Brooklyn Dodgers is woven in there. So it's sort of how that fits culturally.
Right.
So that's a really good one. That's the one.
All right. So, listeners, I'm holding up the cover on my phone.
So Wait Till Next Year by Doris Kearns Goodwin. The other one is a much more, like, this is more of a modern kind of seminal classic, and it's Moneyball.
Okay.
By Michael Lewis. Michael Lewis is the best author I know of at taking unfamiliar, complex areas of life like the stock market or baseball statistics and drawing out the concepts of it in a narrative form that's really interesting.
Okay.
So Moneyball is how the Oakland A's, on a tiny budget, used statistical analysis to become a competitive team when everybody else was kind of going a different direction. But he does a really good job of explaining what the important numbers are, why they matter, how they fit, so you don't have to be a baseball person to get it.
Yeah.
And it's much more a book about kind of alternative ideas than it is baseball specifically.
Gotcha.
And Lewis is a brilliant writer.
Okay.
Yes. Well, and you know, courage to go against the grain, desperation, you know, I mean, because it's just going to be a repeat of what you've had or get worse. That's the scenario he was in.
Well, honestly,
I would lie about reading that, by the way. I've seen the movie and I love the movie, but I've not read the book.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's better.
I know. I would love it. Yeah, I know.
I mean, just because he's so detailed.
Yeah.
So, categorically, I think the best sports books are not really about sports.
Okay.
They are, best sports books are culture books through the lens of sports.
Yep.
So you get a snapshot of a history. So like the Kearns Goodwin book, that's a history book or a memoir book with baseball.
Right.
And so I think that's true across the board with a few exceptions, but you have to kind of be a sports nerd to really enjoy those.
Yeah.
Right. And this one probably leans a little bit. See, I think I would be more interested if it was more just a straight up memoir, kind of like
his
a reflection
life.
Of his, well, really, just a proper reflection of his time as a professional hockey player.
Yeah.
That would be more interesting to me. And there's little pieces of that interspersed throughout, but it's, there's a lot of stuff in between. Yeah. And it's interesting, but it's like, okay, it doesn't make me like hockey more or anything like
and
that.
The thing is, I think the best sports books, because they're not really about sports, they don't necessarily make you care about the sports. Like, The Boys in the Boat is one that would be on my list.
I was just going to say. Right. Like, who cares about rowing?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like well, 11 people at elite schools around the country.
Right.
And
but have you read that one?
No, I haven't.
So it's built around, what is it, the early 30s. Well, like leading, it would be like mid-30s, 34, 35, 36.
Yes.
The collegiate rowing
is 4 years
sport.
Leading up to the
36 the Olympics in, was it Berlin?
Berlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the rise of the Nazi Party. And so then this team from the University of Washington is selected to go to the Olympics and compete in the shadow of the Reich. And so it's really a history book.
Blue collar.
Yep.
Coming
so these
from
are like lumberjacks
Washington
in
State.
Washington and all this stuff. So it's again, it's more of a memoir of life.
Mm-hmm.
But again, here's the other thing. Rowing's a very simple sport to understand.
Sure.
It's like the track and field. It's like track and field on water. Go faster than the other guys.
Right.
Now there's technique and strategy. I don't mean to downplay all that stuff, but you don't really need to know that stuff to appreciate did they or did they not win.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a great example of a sports book that's not really a sports book.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and it's like a lot of people like Seabiscuit. Similar thing. It's like who cares about horse racing during that era? I mean, I know some people.
I read
horse
that one. So that's by Laura Hillenbrand, same author who wrote Unbroken.
Mm-hmm.
I read it after because she was such a good writer and I was certain that I would not enjoy it because nothing is more boring to me than horses running in circles except maybe cars driving in circles and it's a brilliant book. Another one sort of it explains so much about aspects of American history.
Absolutely. The Depression era, right? That's when that took place too. So
well, just remembering that like there was a time when horse racing was front page news and like when somebody, so a horse, I don't remember the name of the horse, won the Triple Crown a couple years ago in horse racing.
American Pharoah.
Yeah, there you go. And I can't remember the name because it's not like horse racing doesn't. It's not a thing. Mm-hmm. But there was a time when it was like the thing, like that heavyweight boxing, these different things.
Baseball would have been about it. Football wasn't what it is.
There was no football. There was no basketball. Yeah. Or they were like
infancy
teams from like lumber companies played against each other or something.
Right.
Yeah. So just a really different era.
Yeah. Just like church league softball, lumber companies. You know, it's the same thing. Yeah. I absolutely. I love. That's why I was, you know, when I was writing down some, I'm like, man, my favorites have all been about some sort of like cultural context. You know, that's it. There's something bigger going on. And that's the thing. Like, you know, if you, Barnabas, like when you watch a baseball game, there's plenty of time to talk, right? And I know we hate like sometimes some of the commentary.
Yeah.
But what they want is story.
Yeah.
They can't just talk about balls and strikes all the whole game. Like, there's got to be something more. Hey, why is this player struggling so much? Oh, well, here's the thing. His mother just passed away a week ago. You know, they do that. You know, they'll do that. And so he just recently came back and, like, you know, he needs something like this. You know, so they'll go into this whole thing to get you cheering for his story when they may not have a clue of, like, what it's going to take.
That's like the entirety of the Olympics, because they know coming in, they're like, literally nobody cares about rhythmic gymnastics. So if we can give a touching backstory of these athletes, people will care. And so then they give, you know, the montage of, you know, single parent coming up through working at Home Depot and now you're, you know, a synchronized swimmer or whatever.
Right.
And the stories matter. There are a couple exceptions, though. Like, because I love sports, I like sports books. So like Bill Simmons' book,
take him or leave him as an author,
but Bill Simmons' book, The Book of Basketball.
Yeah.
If you are a basketball fan, is so fun to read. Because he basically ranks all the great players in history in tiers. So he started, the premise is, the Basketball Hall of Fame is junk and doesn't make any sense, so I'm going to rewrite it. And it's like 1,000 pages long.
So how does he define the tiers? What do you mean, like college, best college players?
No, they're all NBA players. So he recreates, he's like, this is the NBA thing. So right now, the Professional Basketball Hall of Fame, or Basketball Hall of Fame, it's not just professional. It's college, it's coaches, it's writers, it's international. Like, there's no standard whatsoever. Yeah. It's very muddled. And that's why it doesn't really matter to fans.
It's emotional.
So he's like, if I was going to do it, I'd put it in like French Lick, Indiana, where Larry Bird is from, because he's the Boston sports guy. And I would do it literally in tiers, where there's like the guys who just made it in, the guys who are better than those guys, better than these guys, and then like the top 10 is like the pinnacle. So think like a pyramid.
Best of the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he just ranks them in tiers like that. Hmm. And but again, you have to really care about like Artis Gilmore and Bill Russell and like guys from these different eras to find that interesting.
You gotta know this.
Aaron wouldn't care at all.
Yeah, no, I really gotta know the sport to be able to like absorb all that, though. I mean, I know basketball well, but I don't think I could go back past the 50s.
I don't know that he goes back past much past the 50s, because he's like, it almost wasn't basketball at that point. I mean, it was like a Neanderthal game. Right. Like, it was in like its Neanderthal stage of evolution.
Yeah.
You bringing that up may actually help. I think it's actually helped me figure out what just a little bit of the difficulty I'm having connecting with the book that I am reading is. Mm-hmm. Is you have to really, really like hockey to really get some of the stuff that you know, Gretzky talks about in this book.
I just read Bachman's Beartown, which man called, how do you say, Uwe?
Yes.
How do you say Man called Uva. Uva. Thank you. But his follow-up was Beartown, which is all about this. What is it? It's Norway, right? It's where he's from. Is he Norwegian or Swedish?
I think he's Swedish.
But nevertheless, it takes place in a small town there. And just the fact of how youth hockey is everything, you know? And so it's about this youth hockey team. And you know, it's about power, cover-up. It's about, you know, religion being. So it's all those things that speak to, like, okay, what makes you distinctly of that era, and in, I don't know, I think in Canada, I would think, like, there's got to be so much of an identity thing, whether or not it's something you play. I mean,
that's why Friday Night Lights, we've talked about this on other episodes, but Friday Night Lights, it is my favorite sports book, bar none. And I mean, there's not even a close second. If we're thinking Bill Simmons tiers here, like it's the standalone top tier. Everything else falls somewhere below it, because it's not. I mean, I played high school football. I love football. So there's just sort of that resonance with it. But it's one of the best written explanations of a culture, according to football,
yeah,
that I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how, so H.G. Bissinger, I think that's what his name, Buzz Bissinger, moved from Philadelphia to West Texas, Odessa, yeah, Texas, to essentially just report and tell the story, mm-hmm, of how the town worked, and realized when he got there, like, football is the lifeblood of this town.
Yeah.
It's the lifeblood of people who used to play, and they still wear their letter jackets and their rings, and they define it by their state championships 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
The pressure on the players, but also the privilege of the players. Yeah. Like, the entire town circulates in and around football. And then he follows the individual players and their lives. And so, I mean, there are guys from this book. So I think it was the 89 season, 88 season?
Yeah.
It was late 80s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're talking 20... No, wait.
And don't ruin the
30
ending.
Years ago, right?
Yeah.
I'm not good with numbers. But he, I mean, there are characters from this, like the running back's name, the quarterback's name, who I remember better than I remember, like, seminal fictional characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Booby Gibson, and the quarterback's name was Mike. I'm blanking on it now.
But yeah.
But because it was such a brilliant portrait,
mm-hmm,
and it's like the best books do, it's equal parts really triumphant,
mm-hmm,
and really heartbreaking, mm-hmm, both for how the football team does, but also for how the town and the people do.
Yeah.
And it's that is the best sort of sports book, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I, again, we shared earlier in our Shame Fest, I have not read Friday Night Lights.
Shame
a previous podcast. That's what Dave's shame cast.
The episode in which Dave feels bad about stuff.
Yeah.
And Barnabas piles on.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's why he feels bad about stuff.
Fair enough. No, I mean, I absolutely agree in terms of what that does in terms of your love for an area with the characters. You do love barbecue. You, mm-hmm, do love football.
Yes.
None
of which.
Does it end there in Texas? Is that about where it ends?
Right, for me?
Yeah.
Let me think. I think there's a place called. Nope, not. Yeah, I like steak. So I used to go to the Big Texan in Amarillo when I would go through there for work. And so that's.
Gosh.
That was fun.
I've driven past that thing once. When you,
really?
I used to be in sales, and there was a place called Hastings Entertainment that was based out.
That's
they might
right.
still be in business.
They are still there.
Yeah. They're based out of Amarillo, so I'd go there a couple times a year.
That's
You know? You'd show up to the Amarillo airport, fly Southwest.
Yeah.
God bless Southwest, because other than that, it was like puddle jumpers.
Yeah,
that's right.
And the Big Texan, they have a 72-ounce steak, and if you can eat it in a certain amount of time, you get it for free. If not, it costs you know, last year's paycheck. I never tried that. I just ate like normal steaks. But
it's the old 96er from the Great Outdoors.
Actually.
That's right.
It's pretty monstrous.
Yeah, I mean, so you walk in and they have a one behind a glass case.
Yeah.
And it's the size of, it's probably half again as big as a Frisbee, except like 2 to... You know, probably 3 inches thick.
Yeah. Murderous.
So, so really, is a free steak worth the cost of your life? Because that thing's going to kill you.
If you live in Amarillo, a lot of things are worth the cost of your life. Sorry, Texans.
Ow. I want you to rattle off now at this point other books that you've loved that fit kind of what we've talked about. It doesn't have to be all exactly, and you can be mild on them.
All right. So The Boys of Summer by Roger Kahn. So it is, again, so I have a significant crush on the Brooklyn Dodgers. They don't exist anymore. I don't care at all.
Not the Los Angeles Dodgers.
I don't care at all about the Los Angeles Dodgers. The Brooklyn Dodgers.
Right.
The Jackie Robinson, Duke Snider, mm-hmm, you know, Leo Durocher, Brooklyn Dodgers. So this is, Roger Kahn grew up in Brooklyn, used to go to Ebbets Field. And so he grew up as a boy, as a fan of them, became one of the most prominent sports writers, you know, award-winning, gifted writers back when sports writers were seen as, you know, actual artists.
Mm.
And so it's half memoir and then half him going and revisiting the players on this team, so, you know, decades after they were in the game. So visiting them in the 60s and 70s, going to their homes and revisiting things. So just brilliant storytelling, as well as, I mean, there's that was the team that broke the color barrier. Jackie Robinson was on that team. And so they reflect on that and some of the tensions of that and some of the things that really happened. You know, there's been stories that have become legend, you know, like, what was his name? Wasn't Pee Wee Reese. Was it Pee Wee Reese? Who walks across the diamond, puts his arm around. I was getting him mixed up with Phil Rizzuto. Sorry, Dodgers fans. And puts his arm around Jackie Robinson in Cincinnati when... And that's not at all how Pee Wee Reese remembers the story. He's like, I don't remember making it a point to do that at all. He's like, I talk to Jackie all the time. I put my arm around him all the time. But that became it was like a calling a shot of kind of moment. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So Boys of Summer by Roger Kahn's that one. Book by Roland Lazenby called Michael Jordan, The Life. So I would equate this to... If you've read the Steve Jobs biography by Walter Isaacson, this is that in sports.
For Jordan, wow.
Okay.
So you get to see the good, the bad, the ugly with Jordan.
Yeah. Right. That's true. And the conflict of it. Yeah. He's not trying to paint Jordan in a sympathetic light, nor is he trying to tear him down. He's just what it is. This is how Jordan became Jordan and was Jordan.
Right. I agree. That's why I loved Isaacson's right there. I could draw my own conclusions from it. It felt like I was presented facts.
The parallels between those guys are insane in terms of the genius level they had compared to their peers, the timeliness of their rise to commercial success. Mm-hmm. You know, like Jordan created athlete commercial success. Mm-hmm. That didn't really exist before. And people had sponsorships. They did some like hokey little cute commercials. But he was a brand. He was the first sports brand. Yeah. Jobs was a technological brand maker. Yeah. And Apple is still riding his coattails 7 years after his death.
Yeah. You know what I'm amazed by is how Nike has taken the Air Jordan brand and extended it to all these other sports. So, you know, that's why, I mean, every time I look at Yadier Molina's, you know, his breastplate there, and it's got the Air Jordan right there. It's a baseball game. You know, it's so funny. But, like,
there's
Jordan. Nike doesn't do the swoosh. They're like, we're doing the Air Jordan right there. I find that fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, and Jordan is worth billions because of that. And so, I mean, that he was a template maker. Like Jobs was. Now, Bill Gates was at the same time, so there was, you know, they did similar things. But in terms of just individual genius, they're strikingly similar, especially because they are both really unlikable in certain aspects of their lives.
Yeah.
You know, what took them to success was significant character flaw in a lot of ways. I mentioned The Boys in the Boat earlier. Mm-hmm. That's a great one. The Miracle of St. Anthony by Adrian Wojnarowski. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can I say that five times fast?
It's like trying to say Dimbozic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's the story of St. Anthony High School in Jersey City. It was coached by Bob Hurley. If you're a college basketball fan, you will remember Bobby Hurley. That was his son. His son, Dan Hurley, is now a coach at, I think, Arizona State. Yeah. Yeah. So Bobby Hurley was a Duke player on those hated early 90s teams with Grant Hill
and
Christian Laettner. And he was kind of a rogue, tough, street baller kind of guy, which didn't fit in at all at Duke, you know, land of the trust funds. And but he came from Jersey City, so he was like the only white kid on this team is this tiny little Catholic school that every year was about to close its doors.
Yeah.
They had, you know, small, kind of they were an unimpressive team who dominated all their competition nationally. Mm-hmm. You know, so their tallest player was like 6'3", and they'd go up against these teams from Oak Hill Academy, which is like a basketball mill, and just beat the brakes off them. and again, it's another one where Bob Hurley is this genius coach, but you're like, I don't know if I'd want my kid to play for him, because there's this. He would go to such lengths to take care of his players, but he was so, like, driven and harsh. It's this really interesting mix, but also just a really cool story. So Miracle of St. Anthony is a great one. I mentioned Moneyball, Book of Basketball. All right, last one, Soul of Baseball by Joe Posnanski. So Joe Posnanski was a baseball columnist for a bunch of different outlets, worked for the Kansas City Star for a long time, which put him right in the realm of the Negro League Museum in Kansas City. And this is about Buck O'Neill, who was probably the Negro League's greatest ambassador after he played. But he was far, far from their greatest player. Like, he was a good player, but he wasn't Josh Gibson, and he wasn't Satchel Paige and these other guys. But it's basically the story of his life, but also in a very memoir-y sort of way. Mm-hmm. So it's very first person, you know, so Joe's writing it while, like, basically tailing along with him as Buck is an old man and sort of reflecting on life and reflecting on race and reflecting on baseball, but also just Buck was known to have sort of this, he was sort of like the light up every room kind of ethos in terms of how he treated people and the dignity and the respect with which he carried himself and that kind of thing. So it's another one where you read it and you're like, I don't need to care about baseball to care about what this guy is like, this historic character. So that's, I could go on and on. Yeah. I've got many more, but those are ones off the top of my list.
Nice, that's cool. That's
love
cool.
It.
Right. You should read all of them, Aaron, except for the Book of Basketball. You would find zero interest in that.
I would probably
there's no golf everything. In there. I noticed.
I've had recommended to me. What is it called? Is it the Beautiful Game? No. Greatest Game Ever Played. I can't remember the name.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah.
There's a golf book that a friend of mine has. Every time I write about sports books or say anything, he's like, "You have to read this." Yeah. I was like, "I don't care about golf," and he's like, "You don't need to care about golf."
Francis We Met story. Yeah, I think that's what that one is. It was,
So those are I should.
You'd like A Good Walk Spoiled. So
is that Bill?
No, John Feinstein. Thank you.
Okay,
who was it? It was one of his earlier ones. It was great, and it's all about
A Good Walk Spoiled.
I know.
That's a good description of
golf. That's what Mark Twain would call it. Yeah. But I loved it because it was all about all these up and comer guys, you know, just trying to make it, and it was just fascinating. A lot of these guys are still around. But
so here's another thing that'll resonate with you, Aaron.
All right,
you love comics.
I do.
And superheroes.
Yeah.
And origin stories.
I do.
Sports origin stories are fantastic. So how players got, so, you know of LeBron James or Michael Jordan as sort of the mid or late career guy.
Sure.
But how they get there is, those are some of my favorite stories.
Okay.
So the origin of a league or the origin, like those kinds of things are really, really interesting as well. So sports books aren't really sports books. Like they're mostly journalistic or biographies, or I mean, they fall in other genres. They just happen to be about a character who played sports or who coached sports.
Right. And see, I get into musician memoirs and stuff like that.
And you don't know music theory? I mean, maybe I'm underestimating you. We've never talked about it.
You wouldn't be wrong. Right. I have written music. And it's been okay, but it was a long time ago.
I think one of the reasons sports books get overlooked is because the impression of sports from the outside is that it's generally not very intellectual. You know, so like meathead fans, meathead players, a lot of like drunkenness and fighting, a lot of, you know, just we were describing the, you know, rip-roaring drunk Canadian hockey fans. People who write about sports, though, are like, people write about it with the same level of literary ability and storytelling and passion that people write about music or art or history or to write novels. And so there's a disparity between the brilliance of sports writing and the moronic sports fan who you see on an average Saturday in Tennessee during football season.
I think when I see a book really flying that's sports related, it's not at all because, oh man, here's this great statistical book and this and that.
Those are boring.
What's great of what you reference is Moneyball is a story about changing a game. And it's about, it's about courage. Mm-hmm. It's about all those things I put together of what makes a story good. And that's when they get recommended. That's how a Seabiscuit wins. It's great storytelling, and it's about something more than the sport. Yeah. But you enjoy, and you actually get to know the sport. Do you get to know about rowing from Boys in the Boat? Sure, yeah. You realize, okay, I mean, it's not something I really want to do, but I'm still, you can appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah. I read one not too long ago by a guy named S.D. Is it S.D. Smith? I'm getting
no.
S.D. Smith is a fiction writer. S.L. Price.
S.L. Price.
There you go. S.L. Price. His name is Scott Price. S.L. Price. It's called Playing Through the Whistle, but it's like the football version of Hillbilly Elegy.
Okay, interesting.
So, you know, Hillbilly Elegy is a memoir about growing up in essentially in the Rust Belt and kind of the cultural reality of that. This is that, but set in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, after the fall, kind of traces the history, but the fall of the steel industry. And so what is the town like now? What are the people like? What are the racial conflicts like? But how football has been this mainstay there.
Yeah.
And again, it's a, it's much more of a like forgotten America book than it is a football book. And he doesn't spend that much time on football. It's just the thread that, that ties the story together.
Gotcha. Cool.
Those are the best ones.
Cool. I think that's helpful.
So,
all right. So I'm
so
going.
So Aaron,
to,
you have some reading to do.
I do, and right. it works so out well because I'm going to. I'm going to one of the used bookstores.
I'm just
today,
a few ahead
actually.
Of him.
So you, I'm going to read a couple.
If you go to McKay's, you can pick up Friday Night Lights for 50 cents. There's probably 15 copies.
I love it.
Scattered around there.
I love it. So I'll grab one of those, and I mean I have
McKay's.
I have a bajillion dollars in credit there right now, so it works out well.
Man, I have a whole box of books and movies I need to bring there for.
Yeah. Well, we actually just cleaned off a whole bunch of shelves in the house. So, and it was a whole family affair. We all got in and
you
started
all,
doing
you all
purge.
Committed to downsizing.
Correct. So, because, you know, we got to think about what we're going to do in about 2 years when we have to move next. So,
What are they kicking you out of the country?
No.
New place.
No, that's when our lease is up at our apartment.
Gotcha. And, I got nervous for a second. You said
not
it was
as
such
noisy.
Finality.
Yeah, with the neighbors.
Well, yeah. So, so listeners, I moved a couple months ago because my neighbors, for some reason, really like to watch Law and Order at 2 o'clock in the freaking morning, and so I would go to bed and I would hear. The Law and Order, that like dung dung sound from Law and Order. And I would wake up in the morning to go to work and I would hear the same thing and I would hear the theme song.
That
and
two-tone. I guess it's one tone repeated.
Da, 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 da. And then all of you guys here at Lifeway, because apparently everyone I'm friends with here is mean, would do that to me.
Like they would put it on their phones?
No, they would just be like, anytime I mention this, they would automatically like start like humming the song.
You're very triggered.
At me.
You're very triggered.
I am. I'm feeling very, very upset about that. Anyway, I'm working on that.
In your Canadian way.
That's true. But I'm gonna go to McKay's. I'm gonna find something fun to read. The kids are gonna find something fun. We're getting
Everybody
rid of some
wins.
Stuff. I'm not reading that particular book.
No,
you
can drop it
me.
Off at McKay's and see if you can get a nickel for it or something. It's good for somebody else.
And listeners, we're not even gonna tell you what that book is. Yes, but
it may be a work of syrupy Christian fiction.
Entirely possible. Potentially Amish romance.
Lots of pastel colors and you know, generically attractive people.
There will
cover.
Be holding hands in the book
attractive.
And that's how steamy it gets. But yeah, so what are you guys reading right now as we wrap up?
Dave? All right.
Did you start reading Friday Night Lights while we were talking
about it?
He
know,
just ordered
I didn't,
it from
I
Amazon.
I put many other books on the reading list, but I didn't put it on. I will get it. Just
okay,
calm down.
If I buy it
for you, will you read it sooner? This is like a character flaw of yours. And I'm going to disciple you in the way you should go.
Do what you will. I don't know where to go with this.
So the Jersey Brothers. So Barnabas, do you need me to pick him up a copy of Friday Night Lights at McKay's as well?
I will reimburse you the $1.75.
Okay, there we go. All right, we'll take care of that.
So
you
said the Jersey Shore?
No, Jersey Brothers. It's about three brothers.
I didn't know that. Jersey Shore.
It's,
the right, people so, on that show right. can't read, can they?
Actually, a quick note on that before we go back to Jersey Shore. Jersey Brothers. All right, so this is how you do good ways. If you're not interested in just some sort of like history topic, you focus on the personal, right? That's when they do well. That's why I'm broken. Like, you learn a lot about what's going on in that time frame. But like Jersey Brothers is about three brothers. They're all in the Navy. One's a POW from the Japanese.
In the Navy.
One is on the USS Enterprise, so think Battle of Midway. And then the other is back home in Washington as the map room director for Roosevelt. So, like, what's going on at home, what's going on in the current battle in the Pacific, and then what's the perspective of a POW? And it's yeah, it, I mean, I've read so many World War II books, but it's just another great way of telling the Pacific story, which was
why
which
is it
great.
That there are certain wars that have so much better stuff written about them than other wars? Gosh. Like Vietnam. Vietnam does not have nearly the sort of – maybe it's because it was such a contentious time and America doesn't know how to feel about it. Whereas like World War II, everybody was a hero and at least and perceived that way. I don't know. I just feel like World War II is loaded with fantastic books like what you just described.
Yeah,
and I other wars are
and
not.
And they keep coming out. That's why. That came out last fall and I'm like, man, okay.
It probably also helps that up until – I mean, it's dying off, but there was firsthand access to people telling stories, remembering.
Well, with World War II, part of it is that there was a clear
– good guy and bad guy?
A clear good guy and bad guy. There was a clear threat to all people.
Yeah.
Whereas Vietnam was – this weird thing where
there's a third party conflict that the US involved itself in, and that's not a moral statement. It's simply it was a conflict between other peoples that was not a threat to us that we put ourselves in for better and worse.
It was a proxy war, I mean the thing is much like the Korean War, it was a proxy war. It was it was the Soviets versus America.
Anything involving communism during that era was a bit of a trigger for our dear departed government.
Yes. So
what are you reading, Aaron?
There's so much more I want to say, but let's not go there.
Because again, we like our jobs and we'd like to keep them, but or at least we'd like to stay employed.
That's right.
At a minimum,
I think we like our jobs.
That's I like
a fair
my job.
Statement. Yeah, you don't need. There's like no qualifications
job.
Needed there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And we like to stay employed. That's a both and.
Yeah, it's both and. Both. Not neither or. So as we started at the beginning of this podcast, I'm currently going through 99 Stories of the Game by Wayne Gretzky. I just finished The Bassoon King by Rainn Wilson, also known as Dwight Schrute. Dwight Schrute.
I saw
and
you finish that.
It is very entertaining. In its bizarre kind of way.
He is a super bizarre
dude. He's a Baha'i, right? So that's going to play a role.
I don't know what that
means.
He's Baha'i?
So he is. So, okay, so here's the thing. One of the ways that's actually
I don't think they do either.
So it's a fascinating lens to process this book through is think about the Tebow books and the Christian sports people, Christian athletes who have a book that is telling their story.
Like Case Keenum.
Like Case Keenum. Things like this. Okay. Hey, now, just to be clear, I'm not taking shots at anything. I'm telling you this is an interesting thing. So with those books, a lot of them, what they do is that they're telling their story and they're tracing and they're peppering in their faith throughout the book.
And then they say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and so now I'm a professional athlete.
Well, some do that,
did
yes.
I get that right?
Some do that, but then there's usually a chapter at the end that's, the altar call chapter. Okay?
Yes.
So, I'm not saying that's in the Case Keenum book, because I haven't read that book, so.
Christian athlete books tend to be a bit proselytizing, it is true.
There are, so,
there
okay, so.
I'm done with this podcast, I'm just going to kind of sit over here. All right.
Dave just quit. We're not taking shots at any, I'm not taking shots at any book like that right now. I'm just telling you, this is there is a basic formula that I have seen in certain books like this. It's same with pop stars and actors and all that kind of stuff.
The same is true with Christian, any sort of book. Christian actress, Christian musician, Christian whatever.
So, back on track. So this book, interestingly, takes that approach but takes that formula and applies it to the Baha'i faith, which for those who don't know.
The uninitiated.
Is a universalist offshoot of Islam that all the figures of major world religions are all equally authoritative manifestations of God for their time. Yeah, despite the fact that they all at a minimum all of them are in conflict with Jesus.
Yeah, that just sounds like a group hug religion.
It's a little bit, like, hey, but then it's like
not,
basically
we'd
the
not disagree
the new
with
guy,
anything. So let's
but
just
basically
say
the new
straight.
Guy wins, so there's no hell. There's no they're basically the tenets are improve yourself as a person and improve the world. So it's social justice and you know be a better you, and so get to work.
I want to be all I can be.
You know, I can be all things through Christ who strengthens me.
That's something.
Yeah.
Boy.
But it's interesting. So one of the things that this religion is noted for too, and they're very they talk about this a lot.
Please tell me this book's funny.
Oh, it's very funny.
Yeah, because okay, so far I'm not intrigued.
I mean, I know.
Like, no, it's actually
Dwight Schrute here.
Okay, so it's actually funny. So I enjoyed that part, but it is an interesting lens to be able to pick up that pattern throughout the book. Was just kind of, it's like, oh, okay. So this is kind of like what this looks like from that other side too, for us. So, I enjoyed it. And also,
that's how annoying it is. Look at that.
So bad and so good.
Okay. All right. Barnabas.
I am reading the Kenzie and Gennaro series by Dennis Lehane.
Oh.
So
he loves him some Dennis Lehane.
I love me some
How
Dennis
old
Lehane.
Is he now?
I don't know.
He keeps writing. He's still
writing his own books, right?
Sure. Aaron.
He's alive.
Yes, he's alive.
Okay, good.
I think he's I don't think he's that old. I think he's in his, I would guess, 50s. Yeah. But,
all right, let's find out.
So he's, Dennis Lehane's the author of like Mystic River, what is it? A Given Day, and Gone Baby Gone is the Kenzie and Gennaro book that was turned into a movie with Casey Affleck and Michelle Monaghan and Ed Harris and a bunch. Morgan Freeman was in it.
In the movie, yeah.
But that's the fourth book in the series.
Yes.
So
and Mystic River was directed by Clint Eastwood.
Yes. And is excellent.
Yeah. So
gritty.
Good.
To use that term again, it's a little
he's
gritty.
So good
I'm glad
depressing.
You used that term.
It's the right type of depressing. Yes.
That film is gritty in like the term that gritty actually should mean, meaning sort of dark, working class. I mean, it's Southie Boston, Irish mob,
right?
But also very character driven. Yep. The book is The book is better than the movie, and the movie is fantastic. So, but yeah, the Kenzie narrative, and I think Patrick Kenzie. So it's about a two private investigators, Patrick Kenzie and Angela Gennaro. They're in Boston. Yeah. But I think Patrick Kenzie might be my new favorite fictional character that I'm like, I want to be like him. Because he is a disaffected, Irish, smart aleck who just sort of doesn't get rattled. He's not like a tough guy, but neither does he back down from anything. He's smart, but not like a genius. You know, so like... Lehane doesn't write characters that are James Bondy, you know, sort of the omnipotent, perfect, whatever. You know, no Jason Bournes in this. Just people who figure stuff out, but are also kind of flawed and mistaken a lot. And he's really funny. He's really funny. So Patrick Kenzie is my new fictional
That's
man crush.
Guy. All right,
there you go. Yeah. In addition Love to it. Your real life man crushes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
I mean,
there you go.
Look, if there is no. There's no limit on man crushes, especially not fictional ones. So,
word
to the listener.
Okay. All right. And on that note,
it's okay.
And on that note, we're gonna call it a day, guys. So thanks for chatting, and we'll talk to you later.